Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Dan, I thought a heck of a main event tonight. Samoa Joe beating Hook after Hook's arm dropped three times after being put in the coquina clutch. But he survived a lot, including kicking out after one, after a muscle buster when Taz was writing off his son and complimenting the fight he put up. I wasn't expecting a kick out at one. The crowd standing, going nuts for Hook, but also cheering on Joe. I thought this was good. I think this elevated Hook, and it gave Joe the type of win in terms of a dominant performance. And I say that with the asterisk of Hook got in some hope spots and comebacks, but Joe looked like he's all business, hitting big moves, big spots, looking tough, looking badass. What'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. Taz, in honor of the movie season, Taz is no Fritz Von Erich. He's realistic about his son, and I thought they handled a delicate situation really well in the commentary. You know, Taz just got really good instincts. Like when he's like, I need to take the headset off for a minute. It all seemed great. You know, it all seemed to work. And I don't see anybody coming out of this match any the worse for anything. Hook, Joe, they had the stuff with Swerve and Hangman at the end of the match. They seem like big stars. I guess they are big stars. That makes sense. I really like this. And, you know, I heard people say, well, you know, is this the right move? And the only thing I would have done, I wish they would have shown that Hook promo was like 45 seconds. They showed a decent amount of it, but they should have showed the entire promo. But, you know, these are small criticisms. I liked almost everything about the way they handled the match and the execution of it itself. And yeah, you know, Hook it's tough to be the fiery babyface in 2024, but he did a really good job at it, and it all fit.
Tell me a little more about what you thought of this match even happening and Hook issuing the challenge. He's obviously got a strong record, 29-1, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And you know, this match at this time in Joe's title reign, just talk about that and how you grade the job they did hyping it and setting the stage for it over the last week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't really have any criticism of it. I mean, you might say, well, it's a quick build, but, you know, Hook is not really the guy that you think about as being the first in line for a world title shot. But then if you go by record and you go by, you know, the things that a championship committee would look at, if he puts his hat in the ring, it's hard to argue that they shouldn't, you know, it's kind of like NCAA tournament or something. And you've got this team from maybe not quite the SEC. I'll use the Missouri reference to the Big 12 for K-State, but they've proven themselves pretty well against the competition they've faced. And they have faced some good teams and won. And, you know, why not? If they call their shot, and Joe is a defending active champion, he wants to be out there defending the title. I don't think this is one of those things that they had to build up over a month. They're clearly building toward a pay-per-view, and I like the pacing of this show too. I mean, it's kind of nice to have a pay-per-view that far away, where you kind of see what's coming, but you're not entirely sure.
Yeah, this was a novel match, and really, I mean, I think they could have done more on commentary, and I talked about that in terms of Collision on Saturday. I think they could have done more to just talk about what they tried to accomplish during Hook's ring entrance tonight.
Yeah.
You know, what's Hook's attitude? Does he understand what he's getting himself into? Talk about what everyone's thinking. How good is Hook? Has he had the quality of opposition necessary to know what he's going to be in for with Joe? Just own it. Just go, hey, his biggest wins are against Ricky Starks and Ethan Page. And, you know, those are good wins, but, you know, they're not Samoa Joe. They don't have his record. They're not physically imposing like Joe. Hook hasn't faced a guy like Joe who just won a world championship and has something to prove. And then you get the other side. I just felt like this was a match that if you're really excited about it as a wrestling company, as a booker, as announcers, you're just like, okay, we got so much that we can do to talk about this match. And it just didn't seem like they were quite excited enough about telling that story in a compact way. I know Hook's match on Saturday was really short, and there wasn't a lot of room there. But I would have done more. I would have interviewed fans in the concourse outside the arena and aired that going in and out of commercial breaks. Do you think it's too soon for Hook? Get natural, real reactions from the fans. AEW's terrible at conveying, and maybe it's too late because it's not the same as it was early on, but conveying that excitement and anticipation of fans showing up with the merchandise at the arena. Interview them, man on the street interviews. Get their thoughts on the big match of the night, or save it for big matches like this that's novel and sort of undefined. You don't know what's going to happen. You assume Joe's going to win, but how easily, how quickly? Does it hurt Hook? What goes on here? So anyway, I was excited about what they could have done and a little disappointed based on me imagining all the things they could do. That said, what they did was good. It just wasn't enough. I think they left a lot on the table. But they also left themselves with a lot here. With Hangman and Swerve coming out, I'm so glad they didn't get involved in the finish, that it was after the match was over. That was a concern all along. That we're going to get Prince Nana cartoonishly holding the belt up, waiting for, you know, Swerve to pull it away from him or something, like the silliness earlier in the night. And we didn't get that. We just got straight up match and really good commentary. I wish Shivani was around just because, you know, he's been part of the story all along, but Ian Riccaboni did a really nice job and has that history with Samoa Joe and talked about that. And Taz on commentary, like you said, Dan, was a dad trying to be professional, but man, after that nasty Uranagi on the ringside table.
Oh man.
And then the powerbomb on the ring apron. Like, this to me felt like something Paul Heyman would book to get somebody over in losing. Like, it had that sort of, this is a statement moment. You're going to remember this guy lost, but he's badass. He earned your respect. And now you can't wait to see what he does next. So yeah, I thought this, you know, the build was good. I think they could have done a lot more with it. But ultimately the match was compelling. It was kind of, you know, as Jason Hall pointed out in his report, Brock Lesnar-esque in what Joe did. And so anytime Joe sold, you're just like, whoa, how good is Hook? Is he going to score a shocking upset? And the crowd was on their feet. And there was an attempt to chant AEW in the match, but it was sort of like, I think, overtaken by like chants for Hook and cheering. And I wish more wrestlers understood the biggest compliment you can get is not fight forever or this is awesome or the company name being chanted. It's standing and popping for near falls and cheering for one wrestler or another, where you have a rooting interest in what happens, even if you find yourself wavering and bouncing back and forth, chanting for the wrestlers instead of the match and not grading it, but being emotionally invested in it is a really top-level experience, I think, when you're a wrestling fan. And this match accomplished that. Dan, back to you for follow-up.
Yeah, it did, and you alluded to this, but the crowd, they were completely in. I mean, they you know, this was – you had that little bit of wonder. It's like, well, you know, Joe, I like where they're going with Joe. I think they're going the right direction with Joe. Like, he can be the badass champion that can roll through people till he doesn't, but – I mean, there's a little doubt in the back of your mind. It's like, well, they could go all the way with Hook. I mean, it didn't seem just insane. And I actually, you know, I've heard you and Todd talk about some of this. I thought tonight's card was better than most in terms of not knowing who was going to win every match. And so that, you know, even though some of the matches were not at the very top level of stars, they were kind of evenly matched, and there was a little bit of intrigue. At least in a couple of the matches, and then to some degree, even in this one. And the crowd helped make the match too. And that's just because of the performance of the wrestlers. I think that they,
that's the thing, the match made the crowd, and then the crowd helped elevate the match. And that's
exactly
the best. That's the
exactly.
Best.
Yeah.
Any Any thoughts on what this does for Hook and just your thoughts on his performance? We haven't seen him wrestle often, a match that just feels traditional. And I know even in the wrestlers I talked to in recent days from AEW, just getting their opinion on Hook, you know, there was a legit feeling of he's got to show us something. You know, this is a big moment, and he's still, you know, the evaluation on him, he's still very green, and he hasn't had the chance outside of the spotlight, because like everything he does in AEW, you know, it's televised. People are going to see what he does, and they want to protect his act. So he hasn't had that chance to sort of, in a more anonymous, off the grid way, get better in front of real crowds. And so it's a shame that that's the case, because the crowd got him over before he was ready to actually work.
Right.
And so here we are 2 years later. But I think he passed the test. And
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see what he does when he's not just a rag doll taking a beating and then making good comebacks. I want to see him against a peer having a really good match, you know, just Anthony Bowens or something, you know, just like give him 14 minutes and let's see what they can do. That might be next if he's ready for it. I want to see it. But this formula match, this moment, it was a special night.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And you know, you've spoken about this in the past. The fact that AEW has run about 5 house shows in their existence makes it tough for somebody like Hook to be out of the spotlight a little bit and develop. And I don't know the best solution to that. I think you could make a case. I haven't even heard your reporting on this, Wade, but I don't think Jack Perry's actually done with AEW. And he was at New Japan on Saturday night, and you know, they might want to do some excursions to New Japan, and Hook might be a good candidate for that. It may not fit his mantra too much of where he's been in the AEW universe, but, you know, I think there's going to be a decent – the part of the audience that would follow him in New Japan would appreciate his development there, and a big part of the audience probably wouldn't pay that much attention. And then when he comes back with the Bullet, you could maybe really go with him. There's a reason guys back in the day would go elsewhere to develop and come back. And, it just seems like it's such a pressure cooker for him to not have that opportunity that as well as he's progressed, I think it might be time to get him somewhere a little more under the radar and then let him really do some trial and error.
Yep, I agree. Talk about Joe for a second, Dan, as champion. I've talked mostly about Hook, obviously threw some compliments in about Joe and his badass performance and the devastating Uranagi right in front of Taz. I can't imagine how Taz felt watching, you know, Hook bounce off of the table like that, especially with the injuries Taz has had and all of that. I mean, it's just tough. But
I do feel like I tried to watch carefully. After that, I felt like Joe was extra careful. Because I don't think that was exactly how he was supposed to hit. That's my unprofessional view of it. I thought, oh boy, that didn't go exactly the way you wanted to. Because I know it's kind of a lifted up plastic or whatever on the top. The way his neck hit that, I was like, it was rough.
It was. But Joe is sort of like, oh, well, Adam Cole's injured, MJF's injured, we don't really have anyone else ready, Joe's on the calendar to fight MJF, we'll just give him the title. It didn't feel like a master plan. And yet, it feels like a happy accident in the sense. Joe is he's always ready for this moment. Mm-hmm. He's been a champion everywhere he's gone, a world champion holding the top title in ROH and Impact. And here he is in AEW doing it again. And he sort of, you know, that ESPN interview earlier this week, he just talks like, yeah, you know, when you need me, I'm here. I'm a top guy and I'm going to prove it. And the way he carried himself on the way to the ring and the way he wrestled. I don't think they have to look at Joe as like this placeholder bridge to get to Swerve or Hangman again. They might be, but I mean, stuff like this, you're like, why not ride Joe for as long as there's some signs of momentum and let the others fight over one of the other 12 titles.
Yes. Yeah. I'm with you. Joe is, you know, I was worried that they would live in the world of kayfabe and be like, well, he lost to Punk. Can we really make him the world champion? He lost to Punk twice. And that's just absurd in this day and age. I mean, the guy is the most credible world champion you can have in terms of the way he performs and the way he carries himself. And, you know, he can do anything on a card. He really can. And there's no reason not to have him at the top. And I kind of was thinking that there was a good chance they would go with Joe, particularly given MJF's condition. And I was afraid they might be afraid to do it. And it would just, that would have been a huge mistake. You know, and Joe, in my opinion, Joe keeping the title for an extended time is going to make it that much bigger when somebody like Swerve does beat him. Like, if you do it in 2 months, I don't know that you're doing anybody justice. So I hope that they'll commit to him. And again, as long as he keeps, and I'm pretty confident he will, keeps performing like this, why wouldn't you? I mean, he's as good as it gets.
Agreed. All right, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, January 17th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the weekly newsletter that's run for 35 years, and the website launched back in 1999, and podcasts that we've been doing for 20 years, including post shows for nearly a decade now, live after TV shows. And we are here, as I noted, talking AEW Dynamite. And the other voice you hear is Dan Keister. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, a longtime PW Torch VIP member. Going back to our PW Torch VIP forum message board days, Dan, welcome back to the coast here. Good night to have you on.
Yeah, Wade, really appreciate the invitation. And fun show to talk about. So I'm excited to see what everybody has to say.
I am too. We want to hear from you. If you're live streaming our show, thanks for joining us live. If you're not, you can always find a link to the live stream after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision by going to pwtorch.com and clicking on the link to the live stream at the top and bottom of my TV reports covering Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision. You can also go to wadekellerpostshow.com and click on the link to the live stream and navigate to that. Also, we often, but not always, but often post the alert and the link on social media, including Twitter and Threads and Spoutable. So follow us there at PW Torch and all those places. Also, you can call it live and listen. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558, if that works better than streaming. You can just call and listen. Many of you do. But if you call and you want to be on the show, push 1 after you call. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. That's 347-215-8558. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Please note it's now at Gmail, not at PW Torch, because of some spam and bouncing issues of some of your emails. We have just switched to Gmail, and it seems like it's been more reliable for us. So, again, that's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, so with that business taken care of, I do want to note Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net and the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast was on with me yesterday on the flagship, our weekly flagship edition, and you can listen to that by searching Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribing to the Blue Logo Show. That's our regular podcast that features our flagship interviews, flashback shows, and then you can also, if you haven't yet, subscribe to this, the post shows, our Red Logo Show. And both are free to subscribe to, and we invite you to do so. We're available just about anywhere that you can listen to podcasts. All right, let's get to our first call, and we'll go to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois first, and then James and Clemson on deck. Larry, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight? Go ahead, Larry.
Hey, I'm doing good. I want to point out the opening match, would you guess by watching that Dustin Rhodes wrestled his first match in 1988?
Yeah, I mean, he still looks good out there. It was cool. I mean, I've covered Dustin's entire career, and it's nice to see people who were around in my early years publishing still wrestling and being able to put in that kind of smart match. Dan, what do you think of what he did tonight?
Excellent performance. You know, Yeah, I really, and the crowd bought him too. You know, I mean, he hit that crossroads, and people wondered, you know, and we've talked about him in the past, and it's like, well, I think we talked about a Will Hobbs match he had once, and they thought maybe they gave Dustin too much in that one. Tonight, I thought it was completely appropriate. Like, you know, he was a credible challenger. He's been protected enough, and performance was just really fantastic. And, you know, like when they locked up, and I think Taz mentioned this, you don't see guys lock up like that too much anymore. Like, they're actually battling, and it puts me more in a sports-like feel for watching the match. So he does so many little things at the top level. Like, kudos.
My critique would be I wish they gave Dustin more weeks of gaining momentum so that this felt like the culmination of maybe one last run to a title. I just think it would have drawn a better rating, and I think they would have had the crowd even more in the palm of their hands reacting to it instead of just, you know, what – I mean, he beat Brian Keith, and then suddenly that turned into a title match for someone. And so AEW could be better about that. It's not just this match. You know, they get an idea, and they're like, oh, we only have 1 week to build this up, so we'll give someone a quick win on TV, and then they'll challenge for a title, and they get it. So that's one critique. The second thing is, and Dustin's great, he's got his signature moves, but I am not a fan of the spreading the guy's legs in the corner and running and kicking them. I think it's tawdry. I think it's tacky. I think it looks fake. The wrestlers just sit there like that. I don't know why he does it. It's one of my least favorite moves. But Dustin's one of my favorite old school wrestlers. I think he does so many other things so well. There's, you know, he makes what he does count. There's a kind of a pause and a cadence to his moves and what he does after his moves that I think, you know, well, the whole locker room should study it, veterans and young guys. There's definitely a lot to learn from him. And Christian, you know, another old pro doing his thing and doing it well. I mean, you can make the case that AEW has, you know, too many people who were headlining for TNA, you know, 15 years ago, 18 years ago in their company. I guess the Young Bucks, we'll get to them. are going to try to clear the roster of those people. You can make that case, but you know what? When you see two pros go out there and put on a 16-minute match that has a crowd that into it, I mean, really, who cares about age as long as you can deliver like that? It's not politics that's gotten those two into that spot. It's, you know, it's what they can deliver, and they show tonight. Larry, back to you.
You beat me to a punch on a point that I wanted to bring up and see if you agreed with that. That AEW, if they have a flaw, they'll do this kind of short, quick little push. Like all of a sudden, here's Dustin Rhodes with this shot, and I think the thing with Samoa Joe to Hook could have been done again with a little more build up. That would have really it was not that it was nothing tonight. It was done pretty well tonight. That kind of move on to the announce table was, even though he didn't hit it all the way, he hit it enough to where you just cringed watching it. But I think it's a pretty valid criticism that sometimes they'll just put something out there instead of having a week or two of build up for it.
Yeah, Dan, you watch AEW. Do you think that?
Yeah.
To me, it's an easy fix. Maybe, and it's not even easier than said than done. I mean, it's as easy to do as it is to say. Just plan a few more weeks ahead of time, have a few more story arcs going to make these sort of one-off, semi-random TV matches just get elevated to the next level by planning ahead more and telling a story with these title challengers where it doesn't feel like you're cramming, you know, you're the booker cramming for next week's show and rushing things together.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think this is a common problem with AEW. It was certainly a problem in the Dustin Rhodes match, as we talked about. As I said earlier, if you were on the line yet, Larry, I do think with the way the Hook thing made a little bit more sense to me than most of these rushed things, because Samoa Joe came out and he said, I'm calling my shot. If you think you're big and bad and rough and tough and you've got a record, step up. Hook stepped up. To me, that made sense.
Yep.
So I'm okay with the way they did that particular match. As Wade mentioned, the buildup between the original confrontation and the match tonight could have been better. But as a general rule, yeah, they should say, we're going to have this match in 5 weeks. And, you know, you don't even have to have Dustin Rhodes on TV every week. You can put him on Rampage most weeks, put him on Dynamite here, you know, have him do something meaningful and have him get interviewed maybe 3 or 4 weeks out and say, you know, now maybe he's not ready to retire necessarily, but say, hey, I'm building for my, I'm going to take one of my last shots or my last shot. I mean, it's not a super complex story that you have to tell, but just fill in the, you know, color in the coloring book a little bit, you know, fill in the dots. It's not tremendously difficult.
All right, Larry, back to you.
Oh, and I'll switch gears a little bit. Was I the only person that it just seemed like the thought that the sit down interview with the Young Bucks was just kind of, should I give it a little more time, or should I just think that just wasn't done very well? It didn't make me want to see. To me, it didn't make me want to see. Oh, I want to see what they say next week. Or it gave me this kind of get these guys off my TV kind of feeling. It just came off like they were forcing it. I don't know if you guys think the same, but it just didn't come off very well to me.
The Bucks aren't good at this, but I have been pushing for them to put themselves out there and leave their comfort zone, define a character, have a purpose that isn't just seeming like they're trying to get a 5-star rating 5 times a year, and that's enough, and that's what our contribution's going to be. I would have been happy if the words EVP or the letters EVP were never said on AW television. I see zero purpose for ever bringing it up on TV. It's pointless. It's meta. It creates complexity to sort of the narrative structure of the show. Like, why are active wrestlers in executive positions? It just seems like it seems like something you would run from, not lean into. So there's things I didn't like about it content wise, and it wasn't good. I mean, in terms of the execution of it, it was clunky. Nick was better than Matt. Matt felt very, I don't know, just trying to be something that wasn't natural. But this is better.
You just hit a pretty good word. That's clunky. That's a great word. That's the word I probably wanted to say about clunky.
But if they keep, but this is the thing I've been saying is let, even though they're in their, you know, in their 30s and they're veterans and they're executives and they have pride, go out there and leave your comfort zone, because without reps, you're not going to get better. And if you don't go out there and do something, you're going to be just spinning your wheels, living off your past reputation. We're, you know, 4.5 years in here. Of the weekly TV shows, it's time for them to figure out a character that can help drive storylines and make them an integral part of the show. So I am intrigued, and I want to see more, but I'm not going to pretend that was a polished heel promo, sit-down promo, or that I might not have said, let's do another take, although that might have been take 8, and that might have been the best of 12. I don't know. But if it was a first take, kind of shame on them for not doing it a few more times to get a little bit better. But I don't know on that. I ran a poll on Twitter, and I said, what do you think of the Young Bucks' new presentation tonight? 35% thumbs up, 25% thumbs down, 60% not sure yet, and then 25% just said I didn't watch. So that I just didn't want people voting for something if they didn't see it. So we have more thumbs up than thumbs down, but it's not overwhelming, and it's a mixed reaction. So those are some of my initial thoughts. Dan, I am eager to hear yours.
All right. First of all, Dylan, who called in last time I was on, texted me, said he really liked it. I liked it. I'll take the barrows and arrows if I have to.
Yeah.
First of all, are they even still EVPs? I don't think they are. And maybe they are. I thought they lost those positions at some point. They came across to me as like these delusional, you know, kind of bratty know-it-all, putting themselves way above where they actually are, you know, thinking. I really like that. You're welcome for the paycheck, Renee. I liked it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too sympathetic to these guys. But I thought it was smarmy. I thought it was obnoxious. I thought you're really going to want to see Sting, you know, take something out. Sting and Darby beat these guys. There you go. I'm maybe on my own island out there.
Well,
but
no, everything you're saying is what I liked about the promo. I just don't think it was a very good execution of all those good things. I thought it was clunky and just not polished. But it's their first time with the camera aimed at them doing this. And I'm not going to condemn them for leaving their comfort zone and not doing a polished A plus job on their first promo with these characters. I think there's potential with this, and I'll take this over, you know, reliving their PWG days with tassels with no character definition, or disappearing for weeks at a time and not being integral characters on a week-to-week basis. I think you can build on this. I think they can be better than this, but not being great at first isn't a reason to not continue with it, even if you are on national television getting paid $1 million plus a year. You would hope you'd be better than this in terms of the execution, but it wasn't horrible.
They've never been the best at being earnest. If you want, right. I mean, I used to watch BTE every week, and their best stuff is their smart, kind of backhanded, ironic comments that they would make. That's their, for better or worse, that's when they're going to get the most heat. They can't just go out there and, you know, cut generic heel promo, I'm going to get you kind of thing. It's got to be smarmy. And I thought this was good. Like I said, it was a little bit unpolished for sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I've watched them long enough, and I've liked a lot of what they've done that's been a little bit unpolished. I guess I'm more sympathetic than some. But, yeah, that's my take on it.
And here's the thing. I don't think this is a bad choice for their characters. I think this is a good choice for their characters for the reasons you said. I think them being rude and all the things you said, I don't even try to recapture all your words, towards Renee and towards themselves and towards the company and their place in it, it's all stuff to build on. I think it's a good look for them. But it's just not polished yet. But my point in that is, one, I don't want to come across like I'm grading them on a curve.
They're paid like superstars. I just want to say real quickly, because I don't want to forget this, and I apologize.
Yeah.
But
no problem.
I really liked that they were like, Sting's not the problem. We love Sting. Sting, because your heel has to have a foundation in reality. And for them to say, well, Sting's been stealing from the company, he's lazy, whatever they might have said is generic heels, that would have been stupid. Mm-hmm. What they said, but they're like, but hey, we got to, you know, this company's gotten away from our vision of it, and we're gonna be your saviors. He didn't go quite that far, but you see where I'm going. It all had a consistency to it that I really liked.
So the key is one, I want them to get better, and it's hard not to unless they just are insecure over the fact that they didn't come out and just hit it out of the park on their first try here. But I want to be clear that I'm not going to grade them on a curve. I'm going to grade them like I would anybody else, and that wasn't polished to me, but it's something you can build on, and I think it's a move in the right direction. I am curious, Dan, who they go after Sting. Like, you know, it's like Orton was a legend killer. So now they're going to be the overpaid outsider legends who are over the hill killers. Like, I'm a little nervous about this in the sense that do they speak too much truth? Mm-hmm. Are these people? And how does that reflect on them as EVPs or Tony Khan for hiring them? Are Edge and Christian going to unite at some point?
That's what I see.
Yeah.
To be honest, that's what came to my mind, is that may be the thing to pull those guys together, because they're going to be, you know, how dare you say this about
us? But I don't want to see Christian as a baby face. I'm not sure I want to see Adam Copeland and Christian linked together until like 2025. Like, I want Copeland to go do something else for a while, and I don't think I'm alone. But that jumps to mind. Maybe they go after Billy Gunn for what are you doing here still? And so the Gunn brothers stand up to him. I haven't thought through the whole roster yet. And where they can go after Sting. But like I said, I'm intrigued. It's something to build on. But I'm not going to give them a free pass and say that was polished. But I think, like, it's a good start. It's a clunky start, but with a real potential and certainly a step in the right direction, because it seems like, hey, they put some thought into something that they did besides their match on pay-per-view.
Well, and the other thing I like, and I don't want to cut off the caller, but you know, it also gives you intrigue. Like, Sting and Darby came back and said, look, we're going for the world titles. So does that mean it's a three-way? Does that mean the Bucks win the world titles?
Mm-hmm.
I like that intrigue.
Let me throw back to Larry. Any follow-up or you want to change topics? Up to you.
I think I heard him mention something about the kind of delusional "we're the company saviors" idea. I could see them fitting into that really well if they could just be a little more earnest about it. Like something I remember hearing. I read somewhere once about what Michael Hayes said. What makes a heel's delusions believable is that, you know, the heel believes he's telling the truth.
Exactly.
I mean, really
exactly
believes that they can get into it and really believe that they're the rebels, they're saving people, and everyone's turning on them and things like that. I think it could work.
Yeah, that's exactly what came to my mind when I said that, Larry. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
And, one more thing. I would like to say maybe one more thing. And God bless the Briscoes. That was really nice.
That was tremendous.
Yep.
That was tremendous. I almost wanted, I mean, I kind of wanted to almost lead off the show with that because there's been so many things that over the years you watch and you're afraid somebody's going to come in and watch you, see you watching wrestling. And then you see that and you're like, you know, I mean, I teared up. I'm not too proud to admit it. And it was just a first class, absolutely appropriate in my mind in every way. I really am glad they used the TV time for that and to honor the family.
Yep.
Yeah, it was one of those things.
Glad they did it. I liked Mark's emotions. I liked the nieces and nephew coming out and the niece who wasn't going to walking and her hand was shaking. I don't know if she was, you know, nervous or what, but it just everybody felt the nephew. Everybody just felt like they were really feeling the moment. And obviously viewers are too. I mean, one, just watching them, but also just thinking about Jay and the sadness and then watching Mark. And feeling good about the fact that Mark has, you know, had a good year and that AEW's given him a chance to really shine and as a singles wrestler and in mix and match tag matches. It's a feel-good story in that sense that Mark was able to carry on. Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, it's just something, you know, for a few minutes, it was like, this is one of the good things about being a wrestling fan when they do something like this and they get it right. At times, it's like sometimes you want to watch something that's been presented by, well, AEW's done that too a few times. Sometimes you watch, you just want to take a bath afterwards, and then sometimes it's really good like that. And I think I've taken enough of the time for tonight. You've got a bunch of other people online, I'm sure, and a lot more stuff to talk about. So thanks for taking my call, and so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thanks, Larry. Good talking to you. Our number is 347-215-8558. If you're live streaming us and you want to join the convo, please do so. And then push 1 after you call. That'll flag you on our switchboard. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. All right, Todd, James and Clemson's up next. James, welcome. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Dan. It's been a long time since I had a chance to speak to you guys, so it's good to talk to you. So I called about the Young Bucks tonight. you guys kind of hit it pretty hard. So I just have a few points about that. First of all, I'm really always have kind of been on the same page as you, Wade. I think I've sparked a lot of your rants over the past year or so. And so, you know, I'm like you, I'm happy they're trying something. Now I will say like, this was good, but I do still want to see them get in the ring and try this and cut a promo because, you know, the only in-ring promo that I can even think that the Young Bucks did, they walked out and they screamed FTR and then left. So, you know, I want to actually see something in-ring to build up this Sting Darby match.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like what you say, if they would have started doing this a couple of years ago, this would be much better and this build-up to this Sting Darby match would be a whole lot better because then they would actually have something polished to deliver to people on this. So now I feel like the build-up is probably going to be a bit on the mediocre side just because they're not polished at this. So I think that kind of proves your point all along. But some of the notes I wrote down on it, when they talked about losing their way, and stuff like that, I thought it came across a bit delusional. because to me they lost their way on night one when they decided to lose the private party and decided to push other people over the Young Bucks when the Young Bucks should have been the best tag team in the world from night one of AEW, and that never happened. I just wanted to see the Young Bucks be the best tag team of all time and ride that wave. And the other note I wrote down, the beginning of the promo, the rant about the rumors, I have no clue what those rumors were. So I'm hoping one of you can shed some light on what rumors they were talking about.
Dan, clear that up for all of us.
Oh, yeah. Well, unfortunately, James, I'm not at discretion to talk about those things. I've been sworn to secrecy, so I'm going to have to pass that back to Wade, and I'll take notes while he speaks about it. I just think it's this metaverse thing that they're living in that's just kind of out there. But Renee seemed to know, so that's something.
It's so well known, I think it would be wasting everyone's time to spend any more time on it, James. I mean, if AEW is not going to spend time on their TV show telling their millions of viewers, well, they're almost a million viewers about it, that sounded like a dig. It wasn't. It was just me clarifying the record. If they're not going to bother to spend TV time on it, then really, why should I? It's obviously a self-evident to everybody that matters. And so anybody that matters to AEW knows what the Bucks were referring to. And if they felt they needed to bring other people in, they would have, and they didn't. So why should I?
Fair enough.
All right, James, go for it. What else?
Okay,
as far as the Bucks go, actually, James, yeah. Before you go, I want to go to your first point. Dan, what do you think about how the EVPs out of the gate decided, for whatever reason, we're not going to be those people who have power
right. And
push ourselves? And it's like, Cody should have just gone and won that damn AEW world title, not declared he's never going to win it. I thought that took something away from Cody. And all people did were like, well, does that mean he's going to turn heel and break his word? Or why doesn't he want the belt? And I'm sorry, you're throwing your shoulder out, patting yourself on the back, saying, I'm not going to be one of those guys who books myself to win a world title when everybody wanted him to win a world title. So he's actually, you know, ironically going against the grain of what fans wanted, because as the Bucks said, AEW stood for something. And Cody could have represented that in the ring, and the fans would have been happy. So and then you have Kenny, who just, you know, I mean, you know, obviously he's really beat up right now. But along the way here, you're just waiting for him to just take the initiative and go, I'm gonna take control of this roster and this company, and I'm gonna be the lead guy, and everyone jump on my back. I'm gonna carry you, and I'm gonna be the main event guy. And I'm gonna show up every week and cut great promos, and I'm gonna figure out what my character is. And if it's not great for the first 2 weeks or 2 months, it's gonna get better. And a year from now, I'm going to be the centerpiece act, and I'm going to be the MVP of this industry. And that moment never happened. Nothing even close. And then you have the Bucks, you know, as James said, why didn't they just go, we're the best tag team, that's our gimmick, and heel or face, whatever they chose to do, run with it. I look back and I just think it was a missed opportunity out of, you know, trying to not be the people they were trying to not be. But in this case, circumstances were different, and they should have pushed themselves harder, basically. Dan.
Okay, so out of the three, Cody, that was a mistake. Kenny was just kind of in his own world having these matches like he was a – and I don't even want to say he looked at it like he was above the world title, but I think that was the idea. Like the Kenny Omega match could be its own main event, but unfortunately the mainstream U.S. audience didn't get that or know that, and so they – kind of dropped the ball with Kenny for quite a while as well. Kind of agree with James about them losing to private party, but also I'm not going to go back and have a big problem with Daniels, Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky being the first world champions, because that worked. And those guys were really good there for, I don't know how many months. And so they could have had the Bucks beat them, you know, sooner and gone to that. But I understand them not being the very first, because they were doing the tournament, you know. I liked, and why I can't remember the team name now, it's embarrassing, because I was really into those guys. I was kind of okay with that. And so I think then they overdid it, and they kept pushing themselves down, and it was too much. But I would say they didn't necessarily have to be the first tag team champions. I don't think that's as big of a missed opportunity as what there was with Cody and Kenny at the beginning of the company.
Yep. All right, James, back to you.
Yeah, well said. And I'll change the subject in a second, but I really, really, really just want to like these guys. I've said it before. I just really want to be huge fans of these guys like everybody else tells me I should be. So, that's why I talk about them all the time, because I just really want to like these guys. So you made a good point earlier, Dan, about how this show felt a lot more sports-like and unpredictable compared to previous shows, and I hadn't even thought of that, but I agree with you. But there was one little nitpicky thing that stood out to me. I think it was – or Swerve, I wrote it down. Swerve called Hangman an impeccable in-ring performer. And when you're going for a sports-like feel – he is a fighter. He is not a performer. That kind of drove me a little nuts. But this whole Swerve and Hangman angle.
It's this WWE verbiage that I think Swerve's worse than some of them. It's got like built into his brain sometimes. As great as his interviews usually are, like, I never want to hear that WWE talk. And they're like, getting away from it some too.
LeBron James is a great on-court performer. I mean, that would just sound clunky and weird. LeBron James put in a great performance last night in L.A. Okay, yeah, you'd say that, but, like, labeling him an on-court performer instead of a great basketball player is just silly. Just call Hangman a great wrestler or a great fighter or a tough SOB. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
All right, go with you.
Yeah, so on this Hangman and Swerve thing, I'm into it. I like it because I know they have really good chemistry. My biggest fear, though, is that this is going to turn into a triple threat match. I don't want to see a triple threat match. I would much rather see Hangman and Swerve fight it out for who gets the title shot, and then it's a one-on-one match at the pay-per-view. I just don't want to see a triple threat title match. And I think it might have been you and Rich, Wade, but I've heard somebody mention, you know, have Swerve face Joe and lose. Let Joe have a nice long title reign. And then in a few months, you know, come back to it and let that be Swerve's comeuppance. And that's what I want to see. I'm a big fan of Swerve. I really like what he's doing. But again, I just don't want to see a triple threat match. So that's my biggest fear of this. But overall, it's been pretty good in my opinion.
Dan, where do you think we are headed, and what path do you like more than perhaps an alternative?
I like what James brought up. Swerve doesn't have to win the title the first time, but I kind of – we've gotten away from my guy Jay White, and I don't think they're going to go back to him right away. And maybe they're going to go to Ospreay in London, so then maybe the timing gets mixed up. But I kind of feel like Swerve should be the next world champion. But it will probably be more meaningful for him and for the company if it's a struggle and maybe Joe beats him the first time. I like that a lot. And I like Joe rolling through some guys, and then I'm certainly fine with Swerve being the one to ultimately get it done. And I want to ask both you guys, and I really don't know, in the wrestling history of signaling, does that mustache from Hangman tell us about his future as a face or a heel? Because it's
an elite thing,
it's a
Dan.
Mustache. Okay.
The whole elite believes they need mustaches in 2024.
There you go. I there you go. Maybe it's just that simple.
Yep.
It probably has something to do with the rumors.
Yeah. Of course, I was not allowed to mention
that.
It's
so obvious it goes without say. So let's not even say. Yes. Yes. Cool. James, what else?
Just one more thing. It's kind of a rant, but the thing in AEW that has driven me nuts from day one and is still driving me nuts today is their referees just suck.
That
Aubrey drives me nuts.
Finish was horrible.
Horrible.
Sorry.
Yes.
That private party finish. They should have went to. They should have kept going. That was awful.
Yeah, and I honestly sometimes, a lot of times, I just look at my phone through these matches because I can, every time I get into it, something happens that gets me out of it, and it's usually to do with the referee. So you have Aubrey with her insanely over-the-top expressions, and she gets so easily distracted by the dumbest little things, and that drives me nuts. And I just wish a referee would act like a normal human being would in that situation. And then also the finish of the main event tonight. So something that drives me crazy too is if the referees just had more structure, I think things would feel a lot better. And so Samoa Joe choking out Hook and him doing the whole three times with the arm thing, it's not consistent. Sometimes, you know, the person will just pass out and the referee calls the match. Sometimes the referee will raise the arm one time. Sometimes they'll raise it three times. I just want some consistency with those things. And if AEW is really going for a sports-like feel like they say they are, I think starting with your reps is one of the best places they can start right now. They're on the right track with the matches feeling more important, but the referees really need a good talking to.
You know, when WWE enacted a policy, I don't know, a dozen or 18 years ago, I can't remember, where they're not going to mention the referees' names on TV anymore, I was like, come on, that's so lame. You know, it's like when they weren't giving the names of the female interviewers and they would never, you know, like, say what their name was. That was dumb too. I was like, that's petty. That just sounds like, you know, we don't want to make these anonymous, interchangeable people famous so they can go do a podcast afterwards and use their name value or whatever. It's about the wrestlers and no one pays the referee. Okay. I get all that. It still just felt like stupid. Of course you should say the referee's name. Now I'm not so sure. I think AEW would be better off if they had never mentioned the referee's names. I've heard examples of referees behind the scenes in AEW in so many words going, when do I get my moment in this match? They have created sort of monsters with the refereeing, which is weird because as James points out, they have no authority, no sense of authority, no sense of competence, and they're ridiculous. And so, yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, maybe it's worth an editorial, but I also think they're a little too far down the road to do it. But if they just anonymized the referees and told them, like you said, act like regular human beings and stopped booking matches, and this means the Bucks have to adjust too, start executing matches in a way where you need to actually have a really good match within the structure of a referee enforcing the rules of the match. Otherwise, just change the rules, but don't have rules. And I know I sound like Jim Ross now, you know, like going, oh, who's a legal man? But seriously, that structure, if you establish it, can be used as a tool to make breaking from that structure effective. But it's just farcical how that's not paid attention to in AEW. And it does, at least the announcers going, are we supposed to be talking about this or not? Even the super slow 10 count. One.
Mm-hmm.
Two, like, what is that? That's not counted. So anyway, you got me going, James.
Yeah, wait, you just reminded me of one other thing that happened. That when Samoa Joe and Hook are on the outside and Bryce is sitting there yelling at them to take it back into the ring, don't yell at them to take it in the ring. Just get in the ring and count like a referee's supposed to do. Like,
yep.
But, yeah.
I agree, and there's ways around it. Just go watch an old MSG show from 1978 on WWE Network. Like, this is not trying to do something that's never been done. It's just kind of redisciplining yourself to do it. It's like if you just, I don't know, I can use all kinds of, you know, grammar analogies. If you're just used to writing, like, quick notes to a friend and you just give up all grammar and structure and spelling, and then you get a job and they expect clear communication, you kind of got to brush up again on writing clear emails, capital letters, stop using, you know, shortcuts, you know, NGL, stop saying NGL in the middle of things. Like, I think wrestling's gotten so out of the habit, AEW especially, of having a structure and a format, they've kind of forgotten, like, you can have a wrestler break the referee's count at ringside. This has all been done before. Like, if Hook's getting counted out, And you think, well, we want to sell the idea for more than 10 seconds, have Joe roll into the ring and then roll out and get in the way of Hook, and then the ref yells and restarts his count. Like, these techniques are out there. So this isn't hard to do. It's just a matter of respecting the history of this business and the structure of things and doing it, and then they'll find themselves in a better place. This is not limiting. It actually gives them more tools to work with if they establish that structure and then they go to the trouble to have the referees be competent and the wrestlers work within it. I'd enjoy Young Bucks matches more if they had to abide by the rules, because there'd be a sense of excitement that, oh, they're getting away with this, but they got to be quick, instead of, oh, there's no rules and nothing matters. It's all about just sitting in high spots and the match breaking down and the referee standing in the corner haplessly. So, yes, more of a rant for me on this. Dan, anything you want to add?
Well, I would just say you don't need to be ashamed of sounding like Jim Ross, because he's almost always right. I don't care if I sound like a fuddy-duddy. He's right. And he's actually – and people are like, well, why is he undercutting the product? Because somebody needs to listen to that and do what you're saying. Like, he's not doing it to tear down the product as much as he is to try to give people something to learn from.
Yeah.
It's not his fault these people are too stubborn to learn. It's a lack of professionalism. I'm sorry.
Yep. I mean, should Ross say it off air and not on air? Yes. Has he? Probably. Should Tony tell Jim Ross, don't do this on air, and stand up to him, and then have Jim Ross go, yeah, but you know what? How about you listen to what I say behind the scenes? And they can have it out. I think there's just sort of this passive aggressive, you know, push it to the limit, but not too far. Ross can't help himself. He's trying to get the message through. Tony doesn't want confrontation because Ross is a legend. And it's just sort of like, it's not an ideal circumstance. But I don't think Ross has ever been a fuddy-duddy, and I've said he's wrong. But, you know, I've interviewed Jim Ross as much. He's in the top five of people who I've spent, interviewed for 20-plus hours easily over the years, over the decades. And he and I are so aligned, you know, when it comes to this type of thing, the fundamentals, the timeless fundamentals that work for almost any wrestling style that you present. And he feels strongly about it, and I get that. I nod along too, even if sometimes I think, why is Tony letting him say that? And can Ross just write a memo when everyone goes, yes, Ross is right, let's do this, and then we can get past it. But that hasn't happened, yeah. James, anything else for us?
No, I'm going to go ahead and take it off the air. I do just want to add, when Dustin Rhodes came out at the beginning, my wife and I were watching together, and she goes, he got fat. I was like, I had to explain to her that that was not Cody. So that was kind of a funny moment for me.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's funny.
But,
all right.
Yeah, you guys have a good night, and it was a real pleasure getting to speak to you again.
Cool. Thanks, James. Good talking to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee next. Sean, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about Dynamite?
Yeah, it's one of my few times of getting to talk to you about Dynamite on the air.
I know.
Dan, it's my first time getting to talk to you, man. I'm excited about talking to Dan. I've been hearing him on here, and I'm like, you know, keep telling myself, man, I got to talk to this guy, and it's finally my time. Dan, how are you, man? It's good to talk to you.
Oh, wow. I'm feeling good now. Thank you. Thanks, Sean. Yeah, well, we're happy to hear from you.
I hope so, Dan. Don't get it too crazy. Let's see. I hope you are. I love that James is one of my favorite. I enjoy when James is on, and I'm glad he brought that up, because I've thought that a lot too when I watch AEW. I'm like, man, these refs are pretty bad. So I'm glad he brought that up, and you brought up that very well and talked about it very well. I wanted to go back to the main event really fast. Really, like you guys talked about, I liked pretty much everything about it. Talk me off the ledge about Hook kicking out at one after the muscle buster, because I like that they're trying to be different and not just always kicking out at two. I think I get where they were going with it. I thought it hurt it just because that's Joe's muscle buster, and he had dominated most of that point up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And for him just to kick out at one and feel like at the moment he was again, they wanted to make him look strong, and I think they did that really, really well. Like, it wasn't really that for me. It's just the kicking out at one and kind of the no-selling aspect of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Am I way off base? Is that crazy to you guys? Or is it, no, maybe he shouldn't have kicked out at one. Maybe it should have been a two count. And then, you know, I just thought that was a little weird to me.
Sure.
But I thought everything else about it was great. What do you think about that?
Yeah, earlier in the night, it was either Connor or Leona who took a ton of chops from Jay White, and like it was like just Jay's like, you know, pushing him up, like, don't bend over yet, I'm going to deliver 10 more chops. He's just bang 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 bang, and then just I think it was Khan who just completely no-sold it and just made a 100% Superman comeback, Tommy Dreamer style. with no ramifications of the chops. And I'm like, well, why should I care about chops if he's not going to do anything in response to getting chopped that many times from Jay White? Like, so from a standpoint of you make moves count, don't just try to pack in as many moves as you can. I'm an advocate for that, and I thought that was just an example. It's not an egregious example, and it's not the only example probably from this show, but it stood out to me. So I'm for selling. I'm also for dramatic exceptions that really work. There was no point in no selling Jay White's chops. That did nothing for the match. It didn't get the crowd going, whoa, he just made a comeback after all those chops. All it did is said nothing that you just watched for 30 seconds counted because we're going to our next spot. It served no purpose. Hook kicking on at one served a purpose. Now, that's not a blanket endorsement of it. I think reasonable people philosophically can agree or disagree with that choice because that is a protected finisher, and Hook is not, you know, a top guy. But at
right.
least if you do it, it served a real dramatic – it was an effective, dramatic moment in the match. I'm not ready to say I would have eliminated it, but I am not – at all surprised that someone would call and bring that up and go, that was a little too far for me. But I think it worked enough that I'm okay with it, but with some hesitancy and really don't do it more than once a year for anybody. Like, one wrestler gets a kick out at one of someone's finisher once a year max. Really make it count. Don't make this a new thing. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I see both sides of it. This is something, you know, that does happen in Japan, most place I've ever seen it. And if you're familiar with that, there are times where someone will kick out at one to show the fighting spirit, to show the, you know, never say die. And then they may lose in 30 more seconds or 90 more seconds. So if that's the background of which I was watching it, I said this might be a last gasp. I'm showing my fighting spirit, but I still am in trouble. So it kind of worked for me. And I guess it kind of depends on what you're accustomed to seeing. But yeah, it's not something you want to overdo. I agree with Wade on that. But I didn't have a real problem with it just from what I've been watching at different types of wrestling.
All right, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and I think what hurt it a little bit for me, or why I didn't like it, was because Joe's just been such a badass, and he's just dominating the whole match, and then he kicks out at one, and I'm like, oh, man, like, he's such a badass, and now Hook's kicking out at one. Like, I that's the only thing for me that just hurt that part. Like, everything else about it was great. I thought it did a good job of making it feel like a bigger deal.
I guess the only thing I would ask is, I felt like I came out of the match, I still feel like he's a badass. So I feel like the harm was minimal. And I'm asking you, Sean, if you know, I felt like when it was all said and done, you're like, man, he choked that guy out. He took what he took a little bit, but he was kicking the guy's ass, really, for most of the match. So I would ask you, you know, how did you come out of the match thinking about Joe?
What's the thing? And that's what was so good is after that happened, he went right back and started kicking his ass again and got him, you know, choked him out and then was beating him up. But here's the thing about this that I wanted to ask you guys, because I know we talked about this a lot. Joe's such a badass, and he's so great. We love Joe. Everybody cheers for Joe. How long can he stay a heel champion? Because I think the fans, we all want to cheer Joe, and they still do because they just want to cheer Joe, but – how long can he go on with this heel role? Do you think it can just last for a while and they'll just kind of push it because they have so many good faces that are in line? Is it just okay because they have good faces, or do you think they should turn him face at some point down the road?
I don't think you have to turn – thanks, Wade. I don't think you have to – he's just Samoa Joe. He's not Ric Flair in 1983, but he can wrestle Jay White. He can wrestle the bad guys and have the fans fully behind him, but no, the fans are never going to be fully against him because he's Samoa Joe, and I'm cool with that. Like, he doesn't have to be something he's not, and he can, you know, his character will go after the baby face is fine, and if you want to cheer for the baby faces, go do it, but I'm still Samoa Joe. So I say just keep being Samoa Joe. To me, it works wonders. It's awesome. So I just am glad we get to see it.
Yeah, I think ultimately, in fairness to other baby faces, I think Joe ought to be primarily, virtually exclusively booked against baby against heels, because fans are going to cheer him. They're going to chant Joe, 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 and it's not because you can't do it the other way. I just think it hurts the baby faces if they're presented in front of a national audience and the fans are choosing tweener Joe or Joe is just Joe and no one else. And the fans are just consistently choosing Joe over everybody else. I think it undercuts and doesn't protect your baby faces enough. Joe is just that popular with the AEW fan base. And I think that will grow as he puts in more dominant performances. In fairness to baby faces on the roster and protecting them in the future, I just don't think you want to throw them out there and have it be like, yeah, you're the baby face, Joe's the heel, but everyone's cheering Joe. I just think that makes them look bad. So that's my main concern. And I just obviously think it's better if you align characters and how they're presented and who they face, and you align that with how fans feel about them genuinely. You know, when you have that kind of genuine, passionate feeling for Joe, just let Joe be Joe. Don't do what MJF did and start going out there and going, where am I? I'm trying to think of what Joe would call his fans, my Samoan squad, you know, or my whatever, you know, like come up with some nickname for his fans. Like, no, just have Joe keep being Joe, but just put him against heels who you can't see to get whom you cannot wait to see get their ass kicked by him.
Yeah.
Sean,
yeah.
Back to you.
No, I agree. Now going back to, I know, Dan, you want to talk about him, and I do too. The man you talked about, Jay White. Man, I think they have just, I have so many things to say, but I guess it boils down to, I know Tony Khan's thought is, okay, Jay White lost to MJF. I thought that was awful. The way he lost made him look very bad. It portrayed him very weak. His thought is, oh, we'll put a title on him. We'll get him with his gang. He'll win some titles. Jay White, this does nothing for him. He needs to be on his own. I know the Guns have technically gotten better in certain ways. I know, Wade, you've liked Colton a lot, and I do too. I think they've both gotten a little better from when they started, but Jay just needs to get away from them and be on his own. I just think this is dragging him down so low. And him winning the ROH six-man tag team titles are not on the way to stardom for him. I just think he's in a really bad place. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Dan, Jay White, AEW, talk about him.
You know, AEW is really loaded with talent. They're going to be bringing Will Ospreay in, and that's another one. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to wait it out a little bit. I'm with everything Sean brought up. I would like to see to beat MJF. That's what I wanted to see. But we have ended up with Joe, which is really pretty great. I think they're going to be unifying the six-man titles. I think they do need to – I think it's good to have trios titles, or I call them six-man titles. They only need one set of them, and it's a way to keep some really good tag teams busy without having two sets of tag team titles. So I'm okay with all of that. I don't disagree with anything Sean said. I'm not particularly happy with what they're doing with Jay. I think it is okay, though, because the Guns are getting better. He's the leader of the team. Juice is out. I hope that, you know, if they beat the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn and unifying the six-man titles and stay in that world for a little while, then hopefully he's a young man. He should be world champion at some point. Keep him. I guess I'm okay with them keeping him off to the side if they're not going to put the title on him. Different area. I don't disagree with anything he said, but I'm trying to be patient.
Do you like the idea of Jay White not leading a faction, or do you wish it wasn't the Guns, or do you wish the Guns were presenting themselves more differently than prior to create, you know, being part of Bullet Club Gold? Dan?
Oh, I thought you were asking Sean that. No.
Well, I wasn't clear. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, he was great as leader of Bullet Club, yep. and they're missing Juice right now. So it just yeah. doesn't seem like it had a different dynamic with Juice. And so that's nobody's fault. And so, again, in this case, unlike with the way the referees are operating in AEW, I'm willing to be patient and see how it plays out because maybe they add somebody else. But that four-man group was really, really strong, and they were doing great stuff. And, you know, how are you going to work with it? If you're not going to put Jay in the world title picture, I don't think he needs to be messing around with one of these side belts that doesn't mean all that much. So I think the six-man's okay for now. Again, I'm willing to let it play out, but I think they should, you know, they should beat the gun. They should beat the Acclaimed and become the six-man champions. Mm-hmm. And they, if they treat it right, they can treat it as somewhat of a main event type of thing.
All right, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Dan, on them beating the Acclaimed. I'm with you on that for sure. There's no doubt about that. The Acclaimed are just – they're so cold to me right now. I'm glad that feels like it's almost done. And, yeah, I mean, have them unify the titles, that's the best way to do that. But, yeah, I just hope there's something on the horizon, man. I really hope you're right because I feel like they've really misused him very, very badly so far. But, you know, again, you can always play it out. But I wanted to go to my last thing I wanted to talk to you guys about. I think, Wade, you've heard me say I'm a huge Deonna Purrazzo fan, like huge. I've liked her for so long. I thought WWE misused her. She didn't get really a fair shot there. Obviously, she was able to do a lot of great stuff in Impact. Now TNA. Oh, TNA. Now in AEW, I want you to kind of talk about what you think they've done with her so far, like where her trajectory could be. I mean, I'm glad she's, you know, going with Tony. She's, you know, been a thing with her and the I don't know where they're going with her and Tony and then Mariah and Tony. I don't know where all that's going, which is, I mean, it's interesting, I guess. And then just talk more about Tony. I mean, again, I love what Tony's doing. I do enjoy her. I'm torn because, again, it's good. I think somebody brought up the fact, and I do agree that stars do need titles, and she's got the title, and she is a big star. I do like that. So where do you think they're going with Deonna? Do you think Deonna's on a good path? And then what do you think with the shoe fight tonight, with the throwing the shoes back and forth? They're trying to think that's cute. I mean, it was okay. I thought it was kind of lame, but it was what it was. So what do you think about that whole angle with the women, and where do you think the trajectory that Deonna's on since she's coming to AEW?
Dan, tell me what you think of Deonna and also Toni Storm and her presentation tonight opposite her.
The good match tonight for sure. In terms of Deonna's performance, and I thought the crowd was a little flat for it, which I was disappointed by because I thought she did really well. But you know, Wade, I've heard you and Todd talk about this. As entertaining as the Toni Storm stuff is, it's hard to transition to a serious main event world title feud out of it. And I don't know how you get around that. I don't know. I don't have a great solution for it because it does feel just kind of weird. I don't even know. It doesn't seem serious. And Deonna's coming across serious and she's kind of smirking about it. I like that. And maybe they can go with that, but are they going to be afraid to take something off Tony because the crowd really likes this stuff? I'm fine with it. I'm not as high on it as some people, but it's entertaining. But is it entertaining? And I mean, you know, again, do we treat the women differently? Because you certainly wouldn't want Samoa Joe acting like this and trying to treat your world title like it's something serious.
Yeah, I enjoy the Toni Storm character, and I'm fine with her being in the main event if her matches feel ultimately main event and having the right opponent, and then having her in big matches seem like a switch is flipped, and there's something that's still consistent with her character, but she gets serious enough that you get invested in her being a serious person once the bell rings. Not like Festus back in the day where, like, the bell rang, and you're just, whoa, and then it would ring again, and he would retreat, and it's like he was trained, like Pavlov, to get intense and then totally retreat. But that's the example that comes to mind. I would like there to be a sense that Toni Storm's in this la-la land, and then the bell rings, and then she just becomes this world-class athlete. And if they were able to lean, if they were able to establish that and really lean into that on commentary, I think we could get past a lot of people's concerns about it feeling, you know, mid-card comedy, because Toni Storm deserves better than mid-card comedy. And I think this character with just a tweak can succeed in working in that way. Yeah. Sean, if anything, yeah.
No, I just want to say, yeah, I mean, I've been on the train of I really don't want the title on Toni right now, just because I want it to be a serious title, and I just feel like it hasn't been. But like, or I just wanted to ask you real quick. I know you didn't really get to talk about that. I just wanted to hear your thought, because Wade, I haven't really heard you talk about Deonna, where you think she could go, because I do think Deonna could be a main event act. I really do. I think she was so good in ROH,
yeah.
And I really liked her in Impact. So what do you think her ceiling is in AEW? And that's all I had. Wade, I appreciate you, man. And Dan, this was fun, dude. I really enjoyed it. Thank you guys for taking my call.
Hey, real quick, Sean, real quick. I looked it up.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to give you some encouragement here. Jay White's been in the company for about 9 months. You know, I lived through watching Bret Hart build his way up WWF, and I've seen so many people over the years get kind of misplaced and mistreated and had to build their way up. So I'm still – we're on Team Jay White, man. It's going to happen. We just got to be patient.
All right, I'll do
I
that,
believe,
man. I appreciate
believe.
It's fun talking with you, man.
You too. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. Yeah, I think Deonna Purrazzo has a very, very high ceiling in AEW, and I think they're off to a good start treating her as such. I liked her acknowledging her history with Toni Storm, and that, you know, she's not the same person that Toni Storm knew, and nor is Toni Storm the same person she knew. They're both in different places, and they can kind of play off of that. I think it's a way to effectively incorporate real life without treating it like real life is more important than telling good stories on TV. But if real life aligns with telling a good story on TV, then do it. And that's what they did here. I like people from Toni Storm's past looking at her and going, what is going on? Like, I think it's important to have her gimmick be grounded in the reality of who she used to be, if that makes sense. And having people from her past bring that up is helpful. So I like that. And I like Toni Storm just, you know, sort of no selling it and just preening for the camera. I enjoyed her giving Ian Riccaboni a hard time during the match. You know, what was the line? I don't know. Ian said, I don't know what you're doing. Or she said to Ian, I don't know what you're doing with your feet, but do it harder. Something like that. I mean, if Toni wasn't doing this well, it would be awful, but she's doing it really well. She's genuinely witty and knows her character. And so, it's a work in progress in terms of on the periphery of one, filming it and knowing when to be in black and white and when not to. But it's something that she's just a natural at. She's very into it. But, yeah, I think when the bell rings, you want to establish these – she's serious bell to bell. And that's the tweak. You know, that's what I would do to elevate this. And I think that would alleviate some but not all of people's concern with her gimmick. All right, let's wrap up calls here before we get to a few emails to Greg in Waterloo, Iowa. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. I wanted to circle back to the women's conversation in a second, but first thing I wanted to mention was there was a Sting and Darby Allin promo video package that I didn't hear the audio on, but I thought it was interesting. I thought I caught an image of Ricky Starks and Big Bill in the video package. You might have mentioned that, but what did you think that possibly symbolized? Or was there any mention of them or where that might be headed? Because I missed the audio on that.
The audio was them saying that they want to go out world champions, that Sting wants to go out as a tag team champion, and it's kind of a response to, in storyline, them not wanting to wrestle the Bucks. They want to wrestle for the world titles. So the question again becomes, does it become a three-way match? Do the Bucks dedicate themselves to winning the title so they can wrestle in Sting's last match? It was very, you know, already it was a good piece, you know, kind of in that Darby, the world, you know, that kind of the way they uniquely film stuff with him.
Well, thanks for filling that in. It's, I'm subjectively not really all that, you know, my subjective opinion is personally not all that excited about, like, the Young Bucks being Sting's final match. But it'll be interesting to see how they go about that. And honestly, I'd probably rather, if anybody's, if it's going to involve the tag team titles, it would probably be better for, like, maybe the Bucks to win the titles in that situation. But I guess we'll have to see where it goes. But, you know, I do like, if it gives Bill and Ricky something decent, cool to do, that's a good thing as well. And now I want to go back and circle back to the conversation you're just having, because it's interesting. Like, I go back and forth on this with, the whole Toni Storm thing. Like, last time I called in, I mentioned, she obviously does the character so well, but it does affect the quality of some of her matches in the ring. And to me, it kind of feels like it feels so much less serious than everything else on the show. I mean, I know you've got, like, even Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong, the Orange Cassidy character being, of course, has been a more serious edge to it, but it felt way more serious than, like, Orange Cassidy segments feel way more serious than, like, the World Women's Champion segment does. And Toni Storm kind of reminds me of, like, it's very PG divas, like, whereas, like, the character isn't, like, the level of seriousness of it. In terms of, like, obviously, it's much more, like, once, like, the WWE went PG with, like, the presentation of the characters and stuff, like, it's just not really a serious thing. But it's interesting. I think you might be tapping into something, like, if people like Deonna come in and, like, or Mariah May breathing down her neck causes her to become a little more serious, because, I get on my soapbox about this, but if the rumors are true and Mercedes is coming in, like, you've got to have a more serious top of the division for someone like her to come in with. So I'm very interested in where that goes, but I do feel like the way you guys, I think, feel, where it's a bit of a double-edged sword with Toni. Like, the character's so good, but sometimes it might be to the detriment of other people. If Deonna could make her more serious, I think that's a positive. But, like, there's a need for the World Women's Champions to be more serious. And so we'll see if they start to tap into that a little bit going forward. I hope they do.
Cool. Yeah, well put. Greg, anything else you want to bring up?
Not much. I just wanted to chime in on that. And I also thought that the main event was I really enjoyed it for what it was. I was a bit, like, too little, too much with the Muscle Buster myself personally, but match was very good for what it was, and they did a good job of making the match feel like a big deal. And also, I noticed, like, there's matches being made 6 weeks in advance for a pay-per-view in March, and there's much better pacing in terms of, like, maybe it's the December to March wait period that you have to, like, that you're not doing, like, because remember, the last show was, like, there were matches being made the week of. So, like, you already got an idea of what, like, three matches are going to be going 6 weeks out. So that's pretty good, actually. So I'll leave it at that. But that's a positive.
Excellent. Good to hear from you, Greg. Appreciate it. Good comments.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah. All right, we'll go to area code 812. One more call here. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from, 812.
Hey, Wade, it's Jay from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Jay, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Well, I tuned in kind of late to the show, but I was curious if you guys had the on-site correspondent this evening, because I'm driving home from Charleston at the moment.
We did not.
A lovely
and so
city,
it's,
by the way.
Oh, really? Cool. Yeah, we always like to hear about people's experiences. So how far did you drive? Where are you from?
Well, I've been driving for an hour and a half since I left, and I'm still half an hour away. So I live in Columbia, which is also about 2 hours from Greenville. Also a nice city, just so you know.
No, it's one I've been wanting to visit. A lot of people have had good experiences at Missouri games there, and I'd like to get out there.
Yeah, so
we've heard good things about Greenville, yes.
Yeah, I figured.
And Alcorn.
I'm not surprised that you guys didn't have an on-site correspondent, because that building was maybe half full. Even that's given it a lot of credit. Like, they moved a lot of people out from the other side of the arena and stuck them over on the hard cam side, or opposite hard cam. It was very empty, but that crowd, I thought, still came across really solidly, especially given how few people were there.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the – do you know what the capacity of it is? It looks like they – yeah, I'm looking up WrestleTix here. So they had as of – let me see on this. Yeah, right before the show, they had only distributed about 2,500 tickets. And so, yeah, they were not even set up to put many people in that arena.
They weren't set up for much, and they did not fill up much. But like I said, the crowd was still solid all night.
Yeah, yeah. Well, talk about the reaction for Hook and Samoa Joe, the ebb and flow ring entrances. Were the same fans cheering for both, or did fans kind of choose sides? Talk about the atmosphere for that.
Yeah, so that had a really good main event atmosphere, being the main event and all that makes sense. But people were obviously really behind Joe. Everybody cheered for Hook, but I would say Joe got a better reaction overall. But, I mean, everybody was cheering for Hook when he came out. There was a solid Joe's going to kill you chant when the match started, and, I mean, that's basically what happened as well.
It sounded like the crowd was just popping for Hook in his near falls, though. Like, they were really pulled into the drama of the action. Speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody had to know that, like, Hook was not going to win the world title, but they were even still moments. I mean, and I know we criticized the kick out of one earlier, but that got a ginormous reaction from the entire building. I think we can finally put to rest whether or not Hook can sell, because he looked like a dead man on the floor when Joe put him through that table.
I'm not sure that's selling as much as just the effects of being slammed by Joe Hart onto a table, but I know what you mean. he took a it might not have been his choice or a practice skill. It might have just been the actual effect, but he did take a great bump, a good just flat back flailing bump in the ring, in the match, running the ropes with Joe. And yeah, I mean, Hook looked like a professional wrestler out there, not somebody who was in over his head pretending and hoping to someday get the knack for this. This style match worked. Talk about what happened afterwards with Swerve and Hangman, because I'm curious the trajectory for how crowds react to Joe, but also how they react to Hangman compared to Joe, and Hangman compared to Swerve, and Swerve compared to Joe. Talk about that dynamic there and whatever you can tell us about who seemed most popular and how the crowd reacted to him.
Yeah, so the crowd loves all three. Hangman got a huge pop coming down to make the save. And then they showed Swerve in the crowd just standing there not doing a damn thing. And that got a strong, sustained Who's House chant and everything, which eventually transformed into a cowboy stuff chant. Before going back to the Swerve champ before he wandered off, again, doing nothing and getting one of the bigger reactions of the entire night.
Huh. Cool. Dustin Rhodes and Christian in the opener, we talked about this earlier in the show. Did the crowd it seemed like they got pulled into this match and there wasn't a ton of backstory to it. Talk about that.
Yeah, so... not different than the main event by much. Like, you had to assume that Dustin Rhodes was not winning the TNT title, especially with his, like, one or two match winning streak coming in. And surely the crowd didn't think that either. But when he hit that crossroads, I'm pretty sure everybody thought that there might be a chance, you know, before the shenanigans. But, yeah, they did a really good job pulling everybody into that match and the near falls. And obviously they're both excellent workers. So, yeah, it was really – everybody was drawn in.
Cool. Dan, let me throw to you to see if you've got any questions about the on-site experience here.
Yeah, just kind of curious, Jay, about the different people that were shown backstage, whether it be initially Swerve and Hangman were in backstage interviews. You had Jericho. You had the Bucks. How did the crowd respond when those folks showed up on screen?
Yeah, so Swerve and Hangman both got very strong positive reactions, loud enough that I couldn't really tell what they're saying, although sound quality is not really AEW strong suit. But when Jericho came on, he got an audible half and half boo cheer, like half the people are booing and the other half are cheering because they don't know what's going on. Although he did get a pretty positive reaction when he said he was going to be sticking around for Rampage. Not positive enough, though, because a lot of people were filing out at the end of Dynamite, myself included. And then the Bucks segment, seemed really long while we were sitting there and not great. Even though I personally liked a lot of the content of it, it got a repeated "this is boring" chant.
Oh
wow!
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So, but did it seem like the crowd could understand what was being said, or was it just the length of it, and they just wanted to see them in person?
Yeah, I think it was kind of both. So it's like, one, it kind of dragged on and wasn't, like, dynamic, entertaining. And then also, like, when you see them up there, you're like, well, I guess they're not showing up tonight. So it's kind of a disappointment.
Right.
But, yeah, it also did seem long, especially sitting there.
From an in-ring standpoint, what was the low point of the show in terms of crowd engagement?
You could probably guess this, and it's unfortunate, but I would say the women's match probably had the least crowd engagement. People like Deonna Purrazzo, but I think a lot of people don't know who she is. I mean, I know she's only been in AEW for a couple weeks. But, I mean, I thought that was a pretty good match. The crowd did come alive every time they would show Toni Storm on the screen, though, even though we didn't get the pleasure of hearing her commentary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what DVRs are for, right? You can check back later to see what you missed out on.
Yeah, I also need to see how Taz felt about seeing his son get almost murdered.
Ooh, that is absolutely a reason to listen back to.
It's worth watching that, yeah.
Dan, anything else you want to ask Jay?
Well, I guess I'm just assuming the whole Briscoe thing was as cool to see live as I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was really respectful to that, which made me a little proud to be a wrestling fan. I had to explain to my wife what was going on and try not to let her notice that I was tearing up. But, yeah, it was really nice. It was a good moment.
Yeah, everybody involved should be proud of that. That's great. Yeah.
Jay, is there anything else you want to share with us about your experience tonight, either during Dynamite itself or anything before and after?
Nothing interesting surrounding. It actually showed up right on time. Since they moved our seats, I barely caught the beginning of the first match. I'm glad I did because it was an excellent match. Nothing interesting. Merch table is what you guys would expect. Only has like three things, and there's only one, and it's on one side of the arena. So similar problems there, nothing new.
Cool. Jay, I appreciate you calling in. I'm sure you're a little fatigued with two long drives today, but and seeing a wrestling show, but I appreciate it. If there's anything you want to add, great. Otherwise, I appreciate you calling.
Nope, I don't have anything to add, and I'm actually going to leave it at that. Thanks.
Awesome. Long-time listener, I can tell. Thank you, Jay. Thanks for the endorsement for Greenville. Hopefully everybody takes note of that when they visit and touts Greenville. Thanks, Jay. All right. Let's race through just a couple emails here. Maybe more than that. We'll see if it's not too redundant. We talked about sports like presentation today. And so I had Chris he didn't sign it. I don't know what city. Chris A says, so I think I finally connected the dots and figured out what Tony Khan thinks is a sports like presentation, what it means and how he's been following that all along. Let's look at the NFL. A lopsided game between, say, the 49ers and the Panthers still has a minimum time they must play, even if the game is totally one-sided, along with all the scheduled commercial breaks and whatnot. Obviously, after it's 48-0 with 40 minutes to go in the game, people no longer care, turn the channel and leave the stadium. But as long as TK presents things as competitive, even if everyone knows it's not, he thinks people will care, even if the normal sports people do not in that scenario. In a lopsided example where people watching in person, they would leave when it becomes boring, or people watching that just switch to a more interesting game. That is fine here and there in the NFL because week to week may be different. In AEW's case, they follow the same formula episode to episode, week to week, and it just leads to a lot of complacency and fast-forwarding. Why sit through 15 minutes of TV time when very little of it matters if you know exactly what will happen and who will win and when? a preseason NFL game where one team's playing their starters and the other has a bunch of people who won't even make the team doesn't have much appeal for a very big audience. Pushing it even further in a less extreme scenario, I assume the Bills and Chiefs is less interesting to a Viking fan, even if the game is exciting or great. But I guess if you pretend you are one of those head coaches that drills that this game is the only one that we are thinking about, the previous ones don't matter, the next one doesn't matter, this week in a bubble without any context from before or consequences going forward is all that matters, things start to make sense when the stated presentation, with the stated presentation, even if that is an extremely flawed theory. I really, really hope this logic isn't how TK thinks and is intending things to work. But at a high level, without knowing specifically, it sadly does fit better than what's going on, with what's going on than I'd like. Dan, what do you think about that, that Tony's bringing that approach? Is Chris overthinking it and Tony just thinks good wrestling, we want to protect everybody, and it's fine if it takes 15 minutes for someone who's inevitably going to win to ultimately win?
Yeah, I guess I would steer the callers to your conversation with Todd about this. If they are, and go VIP so you can listen to it, I guess. But I don't want to repeat too much of that. I mean, I think at times, I believe it was your counterpoint, or I forget, but you can have 2 5-minute matches to build the match between those two winners and be much more effective than a 10 or 15 minute match where we know what's going to happen. And just because some people that have followed independent wrestling or this, that, and the other think that the person lower on the card is somewhat of a big deal, that's not going to translate to a million people on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's even something Tony's thought a lot about. I mean, I think his instinct from the beginning has been to do it this way. And it's sort of a house show, old school house show format. Here's our matches and we've got this much time to fill. And I think that's where, you know, there's something to what Chris is saying in that, you know, maybe there is a little bit of an NFL approach or just an old-school house show approach where house shows used to be like that. I mean, you'd see some lopsided matches on house shows, but they would give you your money's worth of seeing the star do their thing. Part of it is, obviously, Tony, and I'm not against this if you execute it well. Not everybody's at every show. John Moxley not at Dynamite this week. He will be on Collision on Saturday. That doesn't happen very often. In the box, doing a pre-taped interview, but not showing up in front of the fans. You don't have to have everybody at every building every week. That's a lot of travel. It's wearing people out. But the consequence of that is he doesn't necessarily have the density of roster depth on hand all the time to pack more people into the show. And then there were times where the show was criticized for being too frenetic. So, you know, part of him, his approach might be let's slow things down a little bit too and let wrestlers tell a story. It'd be an interesting question to ask him, you know, if he does interviews again. You know, his philosophy on that and just get him on record on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I think there's room for improvement and the emailers make some good points.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Then Zach in Texas says, gentlemen, to the surprise of nobody, Hook had a way better match with Samoa Joe than Jinder Mahal had with Seth Rollins. Joe helped Hook look like $1 million tonight and Hook looked like he belonged. That's the win he needed. It definitely feels like he could be headed to Swerve versus Hangman, or we could be headed to Swerve versus Hangman for the right to face Joe, which is the way I would go. Bring on the Hell of War match. Also, bring on tag team champion Sting. Darby officially laid down the challenge, and I fully expect the match to happen. Sting's not losing before Evolution, therefore Sting and Darby will win the tag titles, and I will pop. The Bucks leaning all the way in and going full dickhead was the most interesting they've ever been. It certainly makes it easier to cheer against them, and I hope Sting retires as champion, which he should. Dan, any thoughts on that?
Now, it'd be interesting. Maybe they beat Big Bill and Ricky before Revolution. But that it seemed to me from the vignette that they were hoping for the shot at Revolution. So we'll just have to see how that goes. But, yeah, I don't think Sting needs to go out on his back. I mean, there's been discussion about what should be the finish there. Mm-hmm. I would have Sting and Darby win. I think they deserve it. He's been an amazing performer in AEW, above and beyond what anybody could have realistically expected. And it doesn't always have to be, you know, go out on your sword. I mean, if people want to see him win, I've heard the argument Ric Flair should turn on Sting one more time and cost him the match. I mean, other than just nodding your cap to people like us that have been watching for 35 years, I don't know what that really accomplishes. So, I'd like to see Sting go out as a champion. Yeah. it doesn't hurt the tag titles for that to happen at all.
My first live wrestling experience was Vern Gagne's retirement match, and he beat Nick Bockwinkel, retired as champion, and they moved forward from there, although you could say this is a case in point because the company was never the same after that, but that was probably inevitable based on other factors other than the outcome of that match and Vern not putting over the next big star. And they had Hulk Hogan coming up next, and things were certainly just fine attendance-wise and excitement-wise. They just couldn't get Hogan locked down and committed, and Vern didn't believe in him enough unless he married his daughter, to give him the championship. So, it was a little bit of a weird chapter that followed that. But it is not unprecedented for babyfaces retiring to win their final match. And, you know, I think people on the losing end feel it's an honor to do that. So it'll be interesting what choice they make. And, yeah, there's some moving parts here that make things seem a little less predictable, but that's, you know, good because we've got 6 weeks. So you want to have some moving parts, and you're not exactly sure where they're going. Same thing with, like, Rock and WWE. You know, we don't know where it's headed.
Yep.
All right. Go ahead, Ben. Yep.
I just agree. Yeah.
Cool. So we'll end on this one. Chris Fielder of Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. Which, by the way, do you know why it's named Truth or Consequences, Dan?
Cactus Jack? I don't know.
No, it predates that. It predates that.
I figured it did.
Yes.
I don't know.
There was Bob Barker's show before Price is Right was Truth or Consequences, and the game show ran a contest and said if you name your city after our show, we'll come to your city or feature your city on our show. And the residents of whatever was called before that voted to change the name so they could be on Bob Barker's game show. True story, I believe.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
I know. Yep. Chris from there says, hello, Wade. It's been a minute since I've been able to listen to the show, but I'm enjoying it just like I never missed a week. We missed you, Chris. My question tonight is, what's up with Swerve's eyes, or around his eyes, to be specific? I know he's had some problems at home lately, but my man, he looks like he hasn't slept in a month, or he's on some hardcore shit. What do you guys think? I have no idea. I don't know if he was going for a certain look or had a long week. I liked his promo. I mean, I thought he seemed sort of lost in this other world, but he was coherent in expressing his points despite seeming to be sort of lost in some deep thought in other worlds. So, like, whatever was going on, if it was on purpose or just a side effect of other things happening, it was quite the look. I didn't study it enough or ask around, obviously, to find out if something else was up. But, Dan, what struck you?
Yeah, just that it worked, that I don't want to speculate on anything else because I have no idea. I thought sometimes they kind of force the Renee being uncomfortable thing, but in this interview, I thought it really worked, and I liked that interview a lot. I liked the backstage segments in general tonight. I was gonna ask if, and maybe you can follow where I'm going. I got a little flashback to Dusty Rhodes in the TBS studios in 1988 with one of those interviews. If you follow me.
Yes. Yes. Dan,
we can leave it at that. That's fine.
Yes. Yes. We're good. We're good.
All right.
I don't know where the world title's going to be in AEW in 6 months with all the options that they have and everything going on. I mean, Hangman as world champ, Bucks as tag champs, as a heel faction. Is that to set up Will Ospreay beating Hangman at Wembley? Does Joe still have the title when Ospreay shows up? Does Swerve have the title as a heel and Ospreay wins as a face, or vice versa? We could go on, and that's just three or four people I mentioned. So it's fun. You know, they have some real candidates. I don't think they're going to circle back with Jericho, Kenny, or Moxley. But the way they're pushing Hangman and as we talked about with the mustaches and everything, I mean, won't rule that out. Dan, any thoughts on that as we wrap up here?
Just to echo that uncertainty is exciting. That, you know, that when wrestling is at its most interesting is when you have a credible world champion and credible challengers, any one of which could be the next world champion. And again, the guy Ospreay, who, you know, I think they've got to put him in a world. I feel like you got to put him in a world title match at Wembley. That's just now percolating to the surface, which is super exciting. And yeah, I will say, anyone listening to this, if you're a serious wrestling fan, if you have the time, and I know it's hard for all of us to find the time, I found the time to watch that Battle in the Valley, and man, it's a fantastic show. The top five matches all were really good, from really good to just fantastically great, and I would just endorse that to the Torch audience out there if you're looking for something to spend your time and money on.
Yeah, we do have, if you want to follow along with Sean Radican's report. He actually just put up the straight that was the lineup. But I believe we've got a full detailed report up on the site on that too. So people can check that out and kind of follow along on that if they want. But I'm glad I know you mentioned to me before we did the show, you wanted to bring that up. So I'm glad that you did. And
Me say one other thing. The Waterloo Hall of Fame this year is really looking great. They're going to bring some folks in that they haven't ever had before. Yeah. And I want to say that's around July 20th weekend. And I know it's hard for you to make it, Wade, but I hope you will. And it really looks like they're stepping up this is the 25th year of the Hall of Fame. And so they're really going all out. And I know they'd love to see you back there. A really, really, really exciting experience coming up this summer.
Awesome. Dan, good plugs at the end there. Always good talking Dynamite with you. We will circle back on that as summer approaches.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I'd like to grab a beer with you out there, or a mixed drink of some sort of anyone's chosen. Yeah.
Yep. And it is Chris Landell who put up his detailed report on that show. It is on PW Torch, and we had it spotlighted for several days at the top of the website. So Chris Landell did a great job with his report, including star ratings. And he gave a high star rating to the main event, Dan.
As he
and
should. I was coming back from a cruise, so I couldn't watch it live. And I'm still adjusting. I was in 82 degree weather last Thursday. Yeah. It's been an adjustment, but I went out of my way to watch it. And I think it's pretty timeless. Other people should if they get a chance. So thanks for having me again, Wade. I always appreciate it.
Great talk. They gave us a lot to talk about. I feel like we could have gone into even more things, but we've gone long here and covered a lot. So thank you, Dan. Always a pleasure. We'll do this again, hopefully very soon.
Great. Look forward to it.
Yep. Thanks to our listeners, our callers, our emailers, and we'll talk to you all next time.